Hepburn. You're going to have to decide what your priorities are. The Senate will as well, and we'll all have to come together in the end. So we see this as a give-and-take process. The governor, I think, has been clear about what his priorities are, but we'll, of course, are going to be very open to discussions with you. Healthy and lively debate on some of the issues here. Overall, if you look at the focus in terms of priorities, he tried to look at classroom versus other needs, and so where possible, tried to fund looking at classroom as a priority in terms of the higher education bonding request. If you look at the capital projects, I'm going to go through the first two slides, and then Heather Johnston from Finance is going to go through the technical pieces of the presentation. If you have questions about, specific questions about why the governor did this or that, I could try to answer those for you, but I'd be probably the more appropriate person to ask those questions of. There are five key areas in terms of capital project support. There's education, economic development, housing, and transportation. Then there's environment, safer communities, and effective government and public services. That's on slide two. On your third slide, the governor really wanted to focus on balanced approach, guided capital budget decisions. First, recognizing that fiscal constraints on debt service and operating budget deficit. This proposal funds high priorities and program needs, makes selective strategic investments, balances regional needs and statewide issues, and combines new projects with preservation of existing assets.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next slide will show you that there were the total requests that were received were nearly $1.6 billion, well beyond the state's debt capacity. Longstanding capital budget principles were considered, including regaining Minnesota's AAA bond rating for the one rating agency that had downgraded Minnesota, remaining well within our 3% guideline, and also preserving bonding and debt capacity for the coming years. And as Ms. Hegart has indicated, the governor has set his policy agenda, and that the projects must move forward with that. The next slide shows you the total recommendation, the $760 million is all funds, the general obligation bonding funding is $689 million. The 3% debt service limit, as there was some discussion about in a previous committee hearing, would be about $890 million bonding bill. If you look at the priority areas and needs, the education, which includes both K-12 and higher ed, the $5.6 million includes both K-12 and higher ed. Economic development, housing, and transportation is $194 million, and that includes significant funding from the Senate Highway Fund. Environment is $172.4 million. Safer communities is $108.4 million. And then effective government and public services at $89.3 million. To talk specifically to the education, the $195.6 million, MinSCU in the recommendation receives $88.6 million, the University of Minnesota $76.6 million. Just to say a word about the comparability of those two numbers, University of Minnesota will issue their own bonds for their one-third share, whereas the state issues bonds for MinSCU, and so their one-third share is included in that $88.6 million. So MinSCU would pay the debt service for a third of that. Department of Education, except for HEPR, excuse me, just to make sure I clarify, HEPR, as you all know, does not require a one-third share. Department of Education is $24.2 million for a variety of projects, the largest of which is the Red Lake School. Minnesota State Academies and Perfect Center for Art Education are $4.3 million and $1.8 million, respectively, primarily for asset preservation projects. To turn specifically to the governor's recommendations of $88.632 million for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the total request was $274.892 million, and the governor recommended about 32.4% of the request. I won't spend a lot of time going through the details on these projects because I know that you've already heard presentations by both the university and the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, but if there's specific information that you'd like, please feel free to ask. The recommended amount for HEPR, I believe you've also received from MinSCU a list of HEPR projects, and so the recommended amount should fund the top priorities of the campuses that are included on that list. Winona State, the Pastor Science Hall, finishes the renovation, provides the company of Pastor Hall into converting it into a multi-purpose classrooms and science labs. And that is at $10.235 million. Mankato State Hagen Hall of Science, $10.235 million. And that's also for dry science laboratories, faculty offices, and the research and study areas. You'll find a significant theme throughout a lot of these projects are the science component. I think that there was a lot of discussion about the need for the shortage of nurses and the need to get science facilities on a lot of campuses. Century College, the $9.645 million is for the remodel and conversion into a technology-enhanced classroom building. Century College, I believe, is experiencing about a 50% increase in demand for network IT degrees, so this project supports that as well. St. Cloud State Centennial Hall renovation, $4.5 million to complete the remaining part of Centennial Hall. The St. Cloud Technical College, this recommendation includes the science lab and science space. I believe there's an office as well, from both the system-wide science initiative as well as the science lab that was requested as a part of the overall request from St. Cloud Technical. And then South Central Technical College, $4.747 million for that project as well, for the renovation and asset preservation on those two campuses. Slide speaks specifically to the system-wide initiatives. And the first one is science lab renovations, $3.0 million for science labs throughout the system. And we anticipate that Minsky would set those fund those dollars at the highest priority campuses over earmarked any of those specific ones. Workforce training classrooms, $2.0 million on that request for, once again, classrooms across campuses. The demolition initiative, MinSQ had requested $1.625 million in general fund, from the general fund for this initiative. The recommendation is for general obligation bond funding. This demolition initiative would remove $7.6 million in deferred maintenance permanently, in addition to having operational savings as well. Moving on to the University of Minnesota. Governor's recommendation funds paper at $38 million, which would fund all of the identified health and safety projects and about a third of the building systems and utility structure projects as well. The life sciences building at the University of Minnesota Duluth campus is $9.3 million for the completion of the pharmacy, of the space for the pharmacy program, as well as for the additional science space as well. Twin Cities Cool Top Hall is $16.0 million. And Twin Cities Education Sciences Building is $13.3 million as well. Funded at that, which the Cool Top Hall is slightly, the recommendation is slightly lower than the requested amount. The governors did not recommend the revised HEPR, the HEPR Major Building Renewal Project Initiative. Instead, funded these are three separate projects, and so the $16 million brings the Cool Top Hall project in line with. With the two-thirds, one-third split would be. I mentioned the Education Science Building at $13.3 million. It's also contingent on the math at $6.7 million. And the final page is just our website that has all of the detail, including the project narrative and all of these programs as well. So all of these projects as well. Excuse me.
Ms. Johnson, I just want to clarify on slide 8. It indicates Mankato State for 10.2. I assume that's supposed to be Moorhead State.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. I didn't want to get Representative Dorn.
Sorry about that.
The other question I have for you is, on slide 4, you talk about regaining Minnesota's AAA rating, and you also referred to the $890 million cap limit to fit within the 3% guideline. Have any of the bond houses given any indication to us as far as what type of bill they would accept, even though I know the 3% is somewhat within our own requirements? Have they laid out any criteria for maintaining the AAA bond rating or maybe getting
Mr.
back?
Mr. Chair, no, they haven't given us the specifics. They have, they're aware of our 3% guideline and are supportive of that, but they haven't given us any specific guidance in that regard.
Representative Meslow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Johnson, I'd also like to go back to slide 8, if I could, for a moment. And if I'm reading it correctly, I think that the numbers are off, because I also got very excited when I looked at Century and saw $9.645 million, and I thought that was more than we were expecting. And as I look at it, I think that what happened is that if you look at the number that we've now shown as Morehead State rather than Mankato State, that 10.235 number got carried down from Winona State. I think the Morehead State number is supposed to be 9.6. Century is supposed to be 4.5. And St. Cloud State in the combined projects, I believe, is supposed to be 2.9. At least that's how I'm reading off the past recommendations. Have I got that correct?
Yes. Okay. I apologize.
Any other questions for them? Representative Walski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go to slide 4 for a second. And the first checkpoint, just to refresh our memory, could the governor tell us what they would interpret the debt capacity total to be? You say that your requests were 1.6. What would be the limit? Not your number, but what would the limit be?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, that would be the $890 million.
So you're close to the limit then. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. I'd like to also visit about slide 4. And my question has to do with partially the bond rating. I'm curious about the projects that the bonding proposals that we funded last year, those that were vetoed by Governor Ventura. Is that part of that 3%? So when our self-imposed cap of 3% or $890 million, do we need to count the projects that we funded last year as part of that $890 million? To stay within that 3% cap.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, in terms of counting it, those projects that were funded last year would be included in the calculation that would determine what our debt service limitation is. And so, no, it wouldn't be included in an $890 million number. Other than that, it is already the debt service for those projects have already been incorporated into our current law estimates.
So, Ms. Johnson, is there, you're saying that had we not done them, the number possibly could have been larger than this year?
Mr. Chair,
last
that's
year?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Johnson, just to follow up on that line of questioning, so I understand this. Comparing slides 4 and 5, you've got the total recommendation of $760 million, but the GO bonding recommendation is $689. How does that fit in with the $890 million, which counts toward the $890?
Mr. Chair, Representative Latz, I'm glad you asked that question because I was hoping to clarify that as well. You would compare that to the $689 billion general obligation number.
Okay.
Mr.
Chair, Ms. Johnson, so it's fair to say then that there's approximately $200 million in unused GO bonding capacity if we were to go up to the full 3% limit, comparing the governor's proposal with
Mr. Chair, Representative
Johnson.
Blatt, correct.
Any other questions? Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe just so we're all clear, my question goes to do you know the amount that we've already set aside in last year's budget for debt service, and the increased amount of debt service money that we would need to find within our budget to cover the governor's recommendations?
Ms. Johnston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fuller, the exact amount of the debt service that is currently currently in the estimates. I'm not 100% sure of the. It's the February. Or excuse me. The November forecast is based on a $530 million number. I can tell you that debt service will increase $3.654 million over the forecast in fiscal year 04-05 under the governor's rex, and $27.965 million over the forecast in fiscal year 06 and 07.
Okay.
Under the governor's recommendations.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson, would you happen to know if we went up to the $890 million, how much more debt service it would cost us this year that we'd have to find within our limited budget?
Mr. Chair.
The formula that...
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could just clarify, just to make sure folks are clear on some of the general fund implications that have been discussed with respect to the governor's budget, there are also some general fund projects as well. And so sometimes when you hear the general fund impact, you think automatically think debt service. But the total impact is not debt service only. There are also some general fund projects as well. Mr. Chair, turning to your question, the increment between the governor's recommendation and the 3% maximum would be an additional $1 million of debt service in 04-05 and then an additional approximately $2 million in 06 and 07.
Thank you both. I don't see any further questions. We appreciate you coming today and look forward to working with you and appreciate your willingness to come back and work with us on these as we go through the process. We know it's a long process before we get to the final bill. So thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll allow the University of Minnesota to respond. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Richard Fitzenreiter, Fitz for short. I'm CFO and treasurer at the University of Minnesota, and I have with
Kathleen O'Brien, vice president for University Services, University of Minnesota.
I'll wait just a minute for the slide to go around. Mr. Chairman, members, on the slide that, or the handout that I've sent around, just contrasts each of the projects that the University of Minnesota recommended or requested from the governor and the legislature with what the governor recommended, and then showing you in the far right column in red what the governor reduced. And just by way of highlights, as you can see, our HEPA request was $90 million, and as was mentioned earlier, he provided us with 38, which leaves us short about $52 million. In a few minutes, I'll have Kathy O'Brien talk to the importance of HEPA as well as the renewal projects. And in that area, the governor, we're thankful, of course, that he funded the life science project at Duluth, the Koltoff, which is chemistry, the need to renovate that building, the education sciences facility, formerly called the MRRC building. And in those three projects, just for the record, we do not have any concerns about that small amount of $800,000 shift between the state request and the university responsibility. That's not an issue for us. The governor did not fund the AHC education projects, down $9.6 million. The $8 million recreational sports addition at Duluth, which the students have agreed to fund through student fees, the one-third on that project, the $4 million that you see under column C, university debt obligation. And then the Morris project was not funded at all, neither was the two business school projects in both the Twin Cities and Duluth. when you look at column B, the $155,467,000, and you look above it, what the projects represent, $144 million of that request, about 93%, relates directly to renewal, fixing up buildings at the University of Minnesota at both Duluth, Crookston, Morris, and the Twin Cities. This request was about taking care of what we have. It was about renewing our facilities. It was not about a great deal of new construction. Those were the guidelines that the Finance Department and Commissioner McElroy at the time sent to state agencies. He said, emphasize taking care of what you have. Don't ask for a lot of new facilities. And that's what we responded with, a very modest request from the state focused on taking care of the buildings we have. Unfortunately, and it was mentioned earlier, this isn't an argument, or our disappointment isn't predicated on whether or not we got a fair share of a bonding bill. We were very alarmed at comments that said, well, gee, you got $61 million last year in bonding, and you just, because of that, you shouldn't get as much this time. I just want to remind the committee why that alarmed us, and it alarmed us because those were vetoes that Jesse Ventura did 2 years ago, and to be honest, we didn't want to be we didn't want the ghost of Governor Ventura coming into this bonding bill discussion, and unfortunately he has. Those were projects that this committee and the House and the Senate passed 2 years ago, and they were important projects that you restored last year. We just don't feel that that should be a hardship on us on our request this time. The governor did provide us, and we're thankful that he did fund three of those important projects in renewal. We do feel that it's less than we need in the Heber area, and we wish he could go down, and hopefully that you'll be able to go down farther on the list. I'll just have a few comments from Vice President O'Brien here about the importance of the building renewal and what we're doing in that area.
Ms. O'Brien?
Mr. Chair, committee members, in a perfect world, the University of Minnesota would have about $240 million to invest in taking care of what we have in every biennium. Where do I get that number? It's not just out of the air. The university has conducted an inspection-based facilities condition assessment that has given us a good, sound planning horizon for what we need to invest in the next 10 years in university's facilities. And that's about $1.2 billion over the next 10 years. As you saw last week, and as you know from other visits, the University of Minnesota has 24 million square feet of building space to provide the facilities for teaching our students, for cutting-edge research, for the work of faculty and staff. We need to keep these facilities safe and sound. 65% of the buildings are over 30 years old. 25% are more than 70 years old. We realize that the university has to be a partner, and that's why we're here asking for $90 million in Heber and another $40 million in renewal projects, and that the university does annually contribute to condition improvement within the university. We spend about $10 to $20 million a year on renewal projects. We have a repair and replacement fund of about $13 million annually, and then our university auxiliaries support themselves in renewal in building systems, in utilities, and in health safety projects. Also, I think we all recognize that it's much, if we're raising money, if we're doing fundraising, it's much easier to raise money for programmatic improvements and projects that address the needs of researcher students as opposed to putting on a new roof, replacing the windows, upgrading the utility system. Ms. Johnson stated that the Heber proposal and the governor's funds all of the health and safety funding, but about a third of the utilities and building systems funding. Actually, deferring the building systems funding is what will cost us more in the long run. the upgrade that we're doing to university utilities will cut the operating costs for those utilities considerably. And we all know what happens when we delay replacing a roof or windows or other building systems. If you don't need it, do it when it needs to get done, those costs escalate in the future. The request we have before you is a modest request compared to our needs, and we'll be using it to be good stewards of the university's 24 million square feet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, probably a question of Mr. Fitzenreiter. With the renewal projects that aren't funded, how does that drive the HEPR number?
Sir Fitzenreiter.
I assume you've got some repair and betterment on some of those new projects that would be, or those new projects would be replacing some repair and betterment, so does that $90 million request get higher if the renewal isn't funded?
Spitzenreiter.
The only project that the governor did not recommend was the AHC education projects. And if those projects aren't funded, they'll just wait and we'll frankly be back 2 years from now or next session if you have a small bonding bill hoping to get them funded. It wouldn't alter our HEPR request.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I raised that question, I think when we had that kind of a discussion in Austin, they indicated that it would impact, and it wouldn't in this case for the university. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? Seeing none. Thank you both.
Thank you. It was Minsky, I was meaning indicated.
I recall that conversation. Mm-hmm. Mr. Johnson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This project.
Welcome,
Mr. Chair. Chair Stang, I'm Linda Baer, the Senior Vice Chancellor for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I would like to begin our discussion today. Governor Tim Pawlenty has recommended $88.6 million in bonding for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system, which amounts to about 32% of the system's bonding request for $274.9 million. The governor recommended $49 million for major repairs and replacement projects and $39.6 million for building and renovation projects. You can see from the handout, which has traveled from our hearings, that the difference is about $186 million. The governor's proposal is a good start, but we had hoped that he would have gone farther in his recommendations. We recognize that the governor had a difficult time deciding among $1.6 billion in requests from across the state. However, the citizens continue to expect more and more from higher education. Record student enrollments have placed severe constraints on our facilities. The priority list approved by the system's Board of Trustees included science lab renovations, technology updated classrooms, and workforce training improvements, all of which benefit students. We are pleased that the governor recognized some of the system's top priorities. Our top priority was $100 million for repair and replacement projects, and the governor funded almost half of that request. We realize also that funding half of those put us further behind in being able to upgrade our buildings. Three-fourths of the system's bonding requests are for renovation projects. The board and the presidents of our institutions understand the importance of being good stewards of the state's past investments. Legislators did a great job as they toured this last fall, and they understand, you understand better our bonding request. There's no question about the significant value of the projects in meeting the needs of our students and our citizens of the state, particularly in the fields of science and healthcare. Ellen Johnson is here, the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities, to talk about how the governor's recommendations compare with our requests. And we also have three presidents with us with projects that were not on the governor's list, and they will speak briefly about their projects.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chancellor Baer. For the record, I'm Ellen Johnson, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The last time we were before you, we provided you our project listing in the what we call the bonding booklet. And if it should not be at your place today, we have some extras. We'll always have extras. And if any member cares to have one, we'd be pleased to get one out to you. Vice Chancellor Baer also talked about our handout, which I'll refer to as well. There is a significant impact in the governor recommending only 50% of our request for HEPA. Just briefly, at the reduced amount, 11 of our 53 campuses would not be able to have a HEPA allocation at all. Roof projects would be reduced from 41 to 27 across the system. And of those deferred projects, we have five of those roofs are already leaking. Others have exceeded their expected life, and they have wet insulation, ponding, shrinkage of the membrane, and other deterioration. Fire safety projects would be reduced from $8.3 million to $4 million. And major infrastructure projects, those that replace aging mechanical and electrical systems, primarily heating and cooling systems, those would drop from $36 million to $18 million around the system. Deferring this $51 million for another 2 years, because that's what it would be simply deferring it, would increase the cost first by inflation. So if we looked at about a 3% inflation over 2 years, there's about $3 million in additional cost to the state. Then there's the added cost of maintenance, repair, labor, if it has to do with either mopping up from leaks or keeping aged equipment running. And we've estimated that to be as much as 5% per year. So a delay of this $50 million could result in as much as an $8 million impact over the biennium. But pushing these repairs out 2 years also has the ripple effect in that it will push another set of repairs out even further and increasing the cost to replace in the future and only add to the growing backlog of required work. Let me jump to the projects. Once again, we appreciate the governor fully supporting our capital projects, coming down the priority list from number 2, 3, 4, 5, 8. That covered Winona State University, Minnesota State University, Moorhead, Century College, St. Cloud State, and South Central Technical College. But we are concerned that the governor skipped over priority number 6, at Lake Superior College in Duluth, recommended only partially funding for priority number 7 at St. Cloud Technical College, and skipped priority 9 at Inverhills Community College. We believe that these projects are as compelling as others on our list when you think about classrooms, the sciences, and the academics that are addressed in these projects. To echo what's been said prior here this afternoon, you may recall that these three projects were authorized for design by the O2 legislature. They were vetoed. They were then funded for design in 2003, and so we have an already committed state investment for these three projects of $1.9 million. Their design is being advanced right now, and they'll be ready for construction later this year. I'd like to introduce the presidents of these three colleges and ask them to explain to the committee the important attributes of their projects to be sure that nothing has been missed when it comes to the academic parts of our project. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Kathy Nelson, who's the president of Lake Superior College, Dr. Joan Volkmuth, the president of St. Cloud Technical College, and then Dr. Cheryl Frank, the president of Inverhills Community College.
Welcome, Dr. Nelson.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Stang and members. For the record, I'm Kathleen Nelson, president of Lake Superior College in Duluth. On behalf of the students and the staff and actually the citizens of northeastern Minnesota, I want to thank you for taking this opportunity to hear a bit more about our project. I'm really appreciative of the comments that Associate Vice Chancellor Johnson made to this committee on January 20th. about the way that the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system has built its capital project to build capacity where there is student need. Lake Superior College has experienced tremendous growth during the past 5 years. We have experienced a 46% full year equivalent growth in students during that 5 year period and a 52% increase in student headcount. That means that today we are serving almost 1,000 more full year equivalent students than we did just 5 years ago. We are one of the fastest growing institutions of higher education in the state. There are really two principal types of space that we have dedicated to this building project. One, academic classroom space, and the other, student service space. And we believe that both are equally important in this building design. From the academic perspective, we'll be looking at building 11 new larger classrooms to accommodate an additional 350 students per hour. And these new classrooms will, by the time they are built, remove about one half of the space deficits that we have in classroom, which is currently standing at 17,000 square foot deficit. We will be looking at additional classroom space when we're able to consolidate student services and move those services. And so we'll be looking at additional space for renovation to classroom space. Now, these classrooms will directly support the enrollment growth that we have been seeing over the past five and longer years, particularly in some of the critical healthcare areas, some of our larger science lecture classes, our communications, and our economics. Our current enrollment following 2003 actually surpassed the enrollment projections for 2006. So if this building were to be occupied tomorrow morning, by tomorrow afternoon, we would still have about a 67% deficit in our classroom space. The student services part of our building is really critical to support student learning. When the Duluth Technical College and the Duluth Community College Center were merged onto one site in 1996, the focus of that capital project was really on three things: classrooms, laboratories, and building a library. At that time, we were not able to construct adequate student services with the 1994 capital appropriation of $10.8 million. So we really are now seeking the funding that we've identified for more than a decade as needed to support student learning. Providing adequate space for students in non-classroom settings is a critical mission for two-year colleges. Student learning and student development simply cannot be separated. We have to look at where healthy personal, social, and cultural development really supports cognitive development as well. And when we speak of student service space, we're talking about things that support student learning. We're talking about academic advising, academic assessment, services to our veterans, career placement services, assistance with financial aid, multicultural services, and services to students with disabilities. In addition, there is a need for us to maintain student data privacy as mandated by state and federal laws. We need adequate physical space to be able to provide appropriate supports to students within a safe, secure, and private environment. In conclusion, this capital project and our needs for it are real. Our request has been built using a very thorough five-year planning process at both the local and the state levels. We have met the objectives of our system strategic plan, and we've used local and national guidelines to determine the kinds of space that are needed in our building to support student learning. Our Board of Trustees have ranked this project number 6 because they do believe that we have compelling needs. And again, I would ask on behalf of our students that you give your full support to this project in your final deliberations. At that, I would pass to my colleague.
Thank you, Dr. Nelson.
Thank you.
Dr. Volkmuth, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Stang and members of the committee, good afternoon. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity to provide more details of our project with you today. Our project is seventh on the priority list for the Minnesota State Colleges and University Systems, and the project addresses the continued growth of St. Cloud Technical College and the expansion of allied health programs. We have doubled the size of the college since 1990, and we have not added space with capital bonding to the college since that time. The full year equivalent will be up again this year. It will be over 3%, and making this the 14th consecutive year of continued growth. The college served 9,280 students this past year, and that is unduplicated headcount. The project addresses college-wide needs. Because of our growth, we have a space deficit of 40,000 square feet. Most of that deficit is in the area of labs and support space. We're thankful to the governor that he has recognized our need for campus-based anatomy and physiology lab for classes for some 400 students this semester alone. We are currently using temporary lab space at St. Cloud Technical College in a building that they will be remodeling this fall for their own use. The project will increase other classroom space to accommodate 300 plus additional students. This will address waiting lists and applicants turned away because classes were full and there was no space available to add sections. New space for student services will be much more efficient, although it will be 1,100 square feet less space than they are housed in today. The major portion of the project, the allocated dollars for the project, will be for classroom and lab space. 70% will be spent on classroom and lab space. 6,300 square feet will be used for classrooms that will be shared with the co-location of the workforce center. You may be asking, why co-locate a workforce center with the technical college? We have been working on this co-location for 4 years. This is a new model. We are planning on using joint space together and programs together. We want to be more effective and more efficient. English as a second language would be an example. The goal is to quickly respond to the needs of clients and students and to meet the needs of employers with education and training. The college and the workforce center currently work separately with business and industry throughout the central region. The co-location will increase the number of contacts and, in turn, the number of placement opportunities. On behalf of our students, the faculty and staff, and the clients that use our workforce center in central Minnesota, we ask that you approve the 13.9 capital bonding project. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Dr. Prince.
Good afternoon, Chair Stang and members. For the record, I am Cheryl Frank, President of Ember Hills Community College in Ember Grove Heights, Minnesota, and I too appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today about our capital project and offer you some additional information for consideration. Dakota County, our home, has the largest population growth projected in the seven-county metro area, a 38,000 increase by 2007, according to the Metro Council, which is directly impacting campus enrollment. We, too, are currently at record levels with a growth of over 33% since FY 2000, which equals 9,000 unduplicated headcount in credit students and another 2,300 in non-credit students in any given year. By FY 06, we are projecting an almost 90% increase in the campus center building that we're talking about with this project that was opened in 1981. The college is located in the middle of a growing Hispanic, Hmong, and Somali population, resulting in 11% students of color population at the college today. This is a 10% increase in just 1 year. Our registered nurse program alone has 20% students of color. This is a program we are trying to expand, but these students need space for specialized student support services to be successful. This project addresses those same and very important student services requirements mentioned by President Nelson from Duluth to create strong efficiencies in delivering services. But in addition, there are a number of vital academic and workforce training aspects of our project I would like to address. The project will add a new technology training classroom to support network security training, as well as supporting a $3 million National Science Foundation grant that we received in August that is supporting the development of a new Associate of Applied Science degree in networking security with five other colleges in the Midwest. This project will upgrade two existing classrooms and reclaim space in other buildings for two new classrooms to total a gain of five classrooms. The project is critical to the continued success of our Center for Workforce Training and Professional Development, allowing us to continue and expand our partnerships with business and industry through grants from the Minnesota Job Skills Partnerships and the National Science Foundation. Such partnerships have led to our college as being one of only five Cisco academies in the country providing network security training. In addition, we have partnered with Northwest Airlines, Wells Fargo, Thomson Westlaw, Ecolab, 3M, Fortis, Cargill, U.S. Bank, Goodrich Sensor Systems, and others on educational programs for their employees. The program will also provide much-needed space for our Adult Success Through Accelerated program. We call it ASAP. ASAP is the largest accelerated program in Minnesota, serving working adults, dislocated workers, and education assistants and teacher aides who must complete degrees or coursework to keep their jobs under the federal No Child Left Behind Act. The expansion will enable our partnership with Anoka Ramsey Community College and Normandale Community College to offer an Associate of Science degree in biotechnology, an area of high interest to the governor that we're nearing completion about. Without this project, we will be forced to move our customized training to rented space off campus, a costly and inefficient alternative. Indoor Hills Community College has what we and the Board of Trustees believe is a strong, compelling need for this capital project. The Board's strategic plan, directions for increasing access and opportunity, expanding high-quality programs and services, and strengthening community development and economic vitality are all met by this project. The Board of Trustees ranked the project as number 9 in its funding priority. So, on behalf of our students, I too ask that you approve our bonding project that is really ready to go. I will now turn back to Alan Johnson.
Appreciate you three taking time out of your busy schedule to come down.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, Representative Carlson.
Yes.
When you listed off that rather lengthy and impressive list of partnerships that you had with those companies, and you said you were training their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Do you generally do that at the campus then, or at their work site?
We do it at the campus because our Cisco networking certification programs require very high level equipment, and Cisco really has helped the state and our service area here by providing really state-of-the-art technology equipment for networking areas of technology. So they come here. In fact, places like Northwest Airlines loan us one of their engineers so that their employees can come and get the training as well. It's definitely hands-on, practical experience that I'd love to show you if you have a chance out to come out to campus someday. Those labs that we have now are totally full. So having the technology classroom we're talking about is going to help us expand into these other academic areas that I mentioned as part of this project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
I represent Blacks.
Generally, for all three, could we get copies of your presentations?
Could we
have
get those
cleaned up, or
cleaned up for you? And then we'll love to get them for you.
Thank you.
In fact, we're each one of us developing a handout for all of you. So.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, did you have anything you wanted to add, or are you just available for questions now?
Mr. Chair, I'll just wrap up and then stand for questions, okay, if I may. Just real briefly, in the interest of time, the governor, of course, on his recommended list, skipped or partially funded the statewide initiatives that we talked about at the last hearing, those priority numbers 10 through 15, which focus so much, so heavily on science labs and the renovation to create modern classrooms aimed at education, educating Minnesota's workforce. Further, I'd like to point out another important point that in not supporting priority 16 through 20, which included Dakota County Technical College, Minnesota State Community and Technical College at Fergus Falls and Moorhead, Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College at Bemidji, and Minnesota State College Southeast Technical at Winona, these five projects were also funded by the legislature in 2003 for design. That totals some $3.6 million in prior state investment, and these designs are advancing as well. And then finally, there improving science laboratories and teaching spaces, improving safety conditions, updating library and learning spaces, construction trades, training facilities, and making improvements to the spaces serving displaced workers and others seeking employment. The presidents of all the colleges and universities in our system certainly are available to you and to members that are, and they are eager to provide you and committee members with details on the need for these projects, and we'll be doing so over the next several weeks. In the interest of time, I'll close here and stand for any questions you might have.
Any questions from members? Representative Polsky.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, have you calculated the impact on tuition of the debt service under the governor's proposal?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Polsky, not specifically under the governor's proposal, on a very global scale, the debt service at our full request system-wide would rank out about 96 cents per student. Bear in mind it's 130,000 students, 96 cents per student on a $10 million project. Now that'll vary from place to place. At a large school such as St. Cloud State, our request might reflect about a $4 per student per year increase. At a smaller school, it could be as high as $10 to $12 per year per student.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, if I would ask the particular school, would they be able to tell me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Polsky, if not, we could certainly assist that school in answering your question. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, I only ask because we already have built into the budget at least 15% per year, actually more in the second year because the base is a little bit higher. So I would be interested in the impact on tuition.
Johnson. Any other questions for Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, with the request for HEPR being $100 million and the governor at about half that, if I recall your testimony when we were in Austin, you indicated that the campuses had actually proposed to the system $200 million. And then I assume that there must be a list of those initiatives that came in from the campuses that would be similar to the one that we have, you know, that you provided that showed what you were requesting with the $100 million. Would it be available to see what you folks declined to request? Is there such a list? And also, I guess I would, while we're at it, ask if there's such a list of projects that didn't make your list. And the reason I'm asking that is to kind of see the big picture, what the total need, at least in the eyes of the campuses, were, and understanding that you, for whatever reasons, reduced that. But I think to get a feel for the road that we're on, especially for HEPR, with reserving those assets, somebody on a campus identified certain needs that they felt were important to preserve those assets. And if you could provide it, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, we can do that. We have certainly the list at $196 million, I believe it was, and can show you what the campuses requested. There might not be a direct correlation because in dealing with the campuses over 4 to 5 months, projects were packaged and perhaps have been retitled. in order to stack them in there so they were comparative from school to school. But nevertheless, it would certainly give you an idea of what was in that $190 million list and taken down to 100, and of course then ultimately to the governor's recommendation of 49. What we have tried to do across the board was preserve each campus's priorities. So priority number one in the $190 million list should, for all intents and purposes, show as priority number one in our $100 million list, unless in discussions with the campus we moved things down and around and adjusted. The campuses and their presidents have played in this process all along in these last 6 to 8 months.
And Mr. Chairman, the reason I raise that question is that, you know, the comments that have been made were not keeping up. And I think it would be important for the committee to say, when I make that request, I would like to see it individually, but I suspect there may be some other committee members who would like to see it as well.
See no other questions. Thank you, Mr. Gent. We will have a meeting that's on Wednesday in our regularly scheduled time. We will not have a meeting on Thursday. This week we're going to try to keep Thursdays open. The Senate's Higher Education Committee meets at the same time, and we've had problems getting people, the same people required or requested to be over there. So we, unless we get into a time crunch, we won't be meeting Thursdays unless we'll let you know, try to let you know at the beginning of the week if that would change. But
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Lyons.
I don't know if you're finished, but I've been thinking about this whole stuff as the other people were testifying, and I've got some additional questions, if we have time, of the governor's staff.
Sure. She just stepped out, I believe. Do you think
that was quick?
Yes. I think we finance. Well, is it finance or is it more specific to the governor and his perspective on projects?
Well, a couple of them are finance related. So.
Okay. Well, Ms. Johnson, if you wouldn't mind taking some of the finance questions. Go ahead, Representative Lutz.
Thank you, Chairman Stang. I appreciate that. Ms. Johnson, have you calculated, I asked a question about the gap left between what the governor's recommending funding and the 3% cap, about $200 million worth. Have you calculated what the additional debt service would be if the state were to bond for the full amount available under that 3% cap?
Yes, Chairman Stang. I believe that was the same question that the chair had asked, and I believe.
Sorry, I must have missed the answer.
I'm sorry. I believe it was $1 million. I just want to make sure that I understand your question. It's $1 million for a 405 biennium, and then approximately $2 million. It's about $1.9 million in a 6 and 7, and that, just to specify once again, is the gap between the governor's recommendation. I believe the question was also asked, sort of, what is in the forecast versus, by Representative Fuller, the question between what is in the forecast versus what the cap is, and I don't have those numbers, but
okay.
So that's the increment between governor's rec and
Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson. So for want of $3 million over the next 3 years, we could fund up $890 million worth of bonding request. Is that what I'm gathering?
Ms. Johnston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blatt, that's the general fund impact of those, if assuming you're talking general obligation bonds, correct?
Yes.
Representative Blatt?
Yes. And Mr. Chairman, Ms. Johnston, we didn't get a very specific response to the question regarding bond rating houses and how they would view all this. You indicated they hadn't set any specific targets. Have they given any feedback at all? Do we have any sense of how important whatever number we come in at is in terms of that bond rating? I mean, before we even haven't had a bonding bill, they reduced our bond rating based on the budget solution from last last time around. So how is this going to impact that at all, and do we have any outside consultants giving us any guidance on that?
Ms. Johnston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Latz, the bond houses are reluctant to make comments on any specific proposed legislative action or gubernatorial action. And I believe that it's fair to say that the 3% guideline is one in a number of pieces of the overall picture that the bond houses would look at in determining the credit rating. And so I think it would be unlikely that they would want to comment on what a specific number for bonding bill would be.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like we'll have to get information from some other source if we want any better sense other than just one piece of the puzzle of how seriously we should consider this factor. But I do have one follow-up question. I don't know if this is for you or for the other person, but as I understand, higher education accounts for about two-thirds of the building space of the state-owned or connected building space in Minnesota. But this proposal from the governor only covers about 22% of the bonding requests altogether. Higher ed is only 22% of the total governor's proposal. Can you explain the difference there?
Ms. Johnson,
give us some hope for the future.
Mr. Chair, Representative Latz, I'm not sure I can give you much more than what Ms. Hegar gave you earlier in terms of, as you all know, there's about $110 million worth of prisons in these recommendations, which is significantly higher than in other years. I believe Ms. Hegar also mentioned that the environmental area also received a lot more in terms of share of bonding bill under the governor's recommendations than they have over, say, the past 10 years or so. I believe Ms. Heard had indicated that it could be different in the future, so I can't say much more than that.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Johnson, I was a little confused. Don't we have a gap? I thought our budget, when we approved it last year, assumed a level of $530-some million of bonding. So if we go to the governor's recs, don't we have to come up with $3.6 million of debt service? And if we go to the 890, isn't it an additional million? Don't we have to find 4.6?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, your concept is correct. I don't have those numbers right here, but I can grab them. But yes, and in fact, we would need to, under the governor's recommendation, come up with additional revenues to pay the debt service, as well as anything beyond that. You can give me a minute. I can find those specific numbers.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you actually already gave them to us earlier, and I just wanted to confirm I was confused.
You wanted to confirm that you were confused?
Mr. Chair, I'm always confused.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Black.
Thank you. A follow-up on Representative McNamara's question. Madam, has the governor identified any revenue sources for those?
Ms. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Latz, it's my understanding that the governor plans to identify specific revenue sources after the February forecast has been released, perhaps in the first week of March.
He would include that in his supplemental budget for this year.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Representative Cox?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to sound too confused, but I am now. I'll join Representative McNamara. From what I'm hearing, it sounds like you're saying that roughly $200 million of bonding, the debt service would be $1 million in the first 2004-05 and $2 million in 2006-07. That sounds light to me, but I guess between what we had in the budget and what the governor's recommendation is and what we're talking about here, if somebody could just clarify, maybe at the next meeting, just have the financial numbers run on it just to double-check it. Appreciate it.
Okay. We'll get those numbers. Make sure it's straight for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Seeing no other questions, we do have the minutes from last meeting. For us, Representative Meslow, would you move adoption of those minutes?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. And the meeting is adjourned.